Yeah.
I'm here with Jonathan Brown, and we're actually a day before the official start of the Fringe, and Jonathan's back. And Jonathan, my first question to you is, well, actually it's going to take a while, but let's see where you go with this.
It's going to be a long question, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Well, it's this. It's that in the future, we kind of call that unknown, and then we might say something, and then we look back and go, oh, I said that. So some people think the future is unknown, and some people think that the future is waiting to be known, and there's already content there. When you decide to do a show about improvisation that is, well, not about improvisation, that isn't scripted, how do you not pre-script?
I have to be quite careful not to rehearse in my head, at some, I suppose. And at the same time, I let myself off the hook a bit in that if some themes... so we're 2 days away from the first show of this Fringe at Exeter Street Hall. You can't watch this play. And I haven't prepared anything. I did have a few thoughts in the bathroom the other day. But I've got quite a lot on my plate anyway, so I've got lots of things other things to think about. So those things, in a way, will possibly form some of the themes.
But before we get on to you, which
okay.
you will,
no, yeah, but, yeah.
but when you then on stage speak something
yeah.
that hasn't been scripted,
yeah.
do you believe, or have you had an experience of it, or when I spoke it, I sort of mouthed the script that's out there, it just hasn't come from me. So it's like potential. Is what's out there, does it have content, or is it zero and it seems to come from, you know, nowhere?
I'm open to it being either, actually. I guess I don't want to... Yeah. I think it's co-created in the moment with whoever's there. I think it can come out of zero, out of nothing. I think, but there's also archetypes in the room that are playing us, and those archetypes tend to want to be heard as well. I don't want to get too, as you know, too philosophical about it.
No, but you're getting quite mystical if you think archetypes have a wish.
Well, I think so. I think they want to be expressed, and I think they play us like puppets. And I don't know. I'm just trying to think of some archetypes that have been playing us like puppets. The archetype of profit, for example, or of greed, or the archetype of the sugar industry, for example. It's just a huge, you know, being that has... it's not a judgmental thing. It's not a something that has a moral compass. I think it's just this thing that exists and that wants to be heard.
In older English, there was a word egregore. An egregore was the sort of the collective willed thought being. And that could be the Holy Grail, that could be a shining light that you all saw when you meditated together before going into battle. It could be the sugar industry. But there is some suggestion that when you put a lot of energy into something, the something comes into being, whether you can't see it or not, and then you just articulate it. Well, because someone that sees a lot of theatre and scripted theatre and a lot of improvisation that doesn't impress me, when you do see improvisation that suddenly sends a shiver up your spine, it's like... You know, something has been seen for the first time that perhaps was there, and someone has channeled it, rather than what doesn't seem right for me is that things arise out of zero, out of nothing.
Right. Well, that's where we might have to disagree, because I think that we can create out of nothing, and I think that there is also the possibility that we're channeling something. But to me, channeling sort of suggests that I am a channel, and that we are a channel, and... Although, again, I don't deny that can be so. I don't know. Questioning where it comes from, I'm not sure it's part of what what serves the creation process or the allowing through process, if that's what's happening. I mean, I think maybe it's a bit of both, but I definitely feel that we create out of nothing in the same way that the Big Bang created, supposedly. You know, one theory is it created out of nothing, the whole universe. You know, that we, you know, I sit down at a blank page and it's a blank page, and onto it comes a set of characters. If I'm writing, a set of characters, you know, going to a blank space, into it come a set of characters, a set of beings, a set of thoughts and ideas. And yes, you know, Trump might come in, and you know, because he's around, and Brexit might come in because that's around, and you know, all those beings are around, but how they are brought together, how they are, you know, how the paint is mixed, as it were, that is happening in the moment, I think. And
yeah, and so there's content clearly that you're going to draw on as an improviser from what's already out there and history, but there are also sparks, let's say the word, of originality that can't be found in the libraries of the past.
Well, again, I'd say that hopefully part of that originality is how it's mixed in the moment and how it's how the threads are drawn together and how the oh no, it's gone now. That thought was just there. It's like a man from Porlock just walked in. How the connections are noticed, I suppose. Yeah. So how the connections are noticed. Oh yeah, I can see that connection and that connection. Two quite disparate things, but and maybe I'm not doing that. You know, I don't know who is doing it. Generally, it's a part of me, but I'm definitely not the conscious ego aspect of me. It's more. Although you know my ego is right up there, but the cleverer, slightly trickstery aspect of me is hopefully getting in there, and the muse, the creative twin, is getting in there and playing as well. And that's the idea. You know, I think the idea is for me to get out of the way, Jonathan Brown to get out of the way, and to leave space for that creative aspect to do its weaving.
So as you write the unwatchable play that hasn't been written, and also in the letter that you wrote to Fringe Review, and we know of your work, you've made a decision not to script. Yeah. There is a blank page.
Yeah.
In Hamlet's terms, maybe at some point you just went words, 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 and this time let's start with a blank page because we've done a lot of words. When you decide to do that, then are you really in the days that, because we know you've got the talent and we know that you've got the history and we know that you've got what you have and your reviews and your awards and stuff, but you're going to step on a stage in front of an audience, and here we are a couple of days before, and I'm still interested then, if there's no script, what is there?
I don't know, there's nothing.
But that could be what it is. That could be the content.
In a way, it can't work if there is something. It has to, I have to make nothing, give nothing space, is what I mean. I have to make sure that there's as little as possible, in a way. Not to say that I don't perhaps go in with some techniques and some top tips for eliciting from the space, from the room, from the people, from myself, what might want to come, might be there.
Yeah, so stretching the definition of nothing. Jonathan Brown in a silent, empty room doing an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be different, is it, from Jonathan Brown in a room with an audience?
Oh, definitely, yeah, because the audience are very much...
So it's not nothing, then?
No, it's definitely not nothing. I mean, do it in a blank room, do it in a room that's got a history of its own, do it in a room that's got a history of its own on a street that's got its history and its personalities. Exeter Street Hall has got a long history. Do it on a certain day of the year, in May, in a part of the Fringe which has got its history. It's all there to be drawn upon. It's too much. If anything, it's too much.
Yeah. And that's what I'm getting at. I'm saying you can call it nothing. You can call it a blank page.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all there at the moment, hidden and latent. And the art of the improviser is just being allowed... I won't say channel, but that's invisible paint that's going to suddenly appear in front of everyone.
So... again, another aspect is to try and get to a point where all of that possibility is also put to one side,
right.
So it feels much more blank.
Okay, well, because in sort of ancient traditions, around the time of the ancient fool as well, in the Rosicrucian kind of tradition, that was about meditating on a symbol, and then once you could be able to reproduce it, you suggested it away. And then in that space, some other content appeared, and then you suggested that away. So I think maybe, whether you've stumbled upon it or decided, what you're trying to do is allow the content to come out and then shunt that aside.
Yes.
I mean, that's wonderfully dangerous, isn't it? This is a kind of wonderful...
But it's because always there to go back to if I get stuck,
Yeah, and it won't be a meltdown because you've got the skills.
Well, but also, it's got the thing that you just shunted away is still there. You can always go back to it and say, well, let's carry on with that story, or let's carry on with that theme or that idea, and let's extend it. Stop, that's what I do often, is just let's just stop and see what's What's here?
Okay, so this something underground that's going to serve. is this the right time for you? I mean, where did this? Yeah, where did this impulse come from?
I've been doing it since 2015, so you may not have clocked it, but I've been doing it since before then. But it's 2015 that I first took. I brought it as a show called Je Suis a Fool's Guide to Cliff Edges, I think it was called, yeah. And I did it again at Exeter Street Hall. My mother was dying. She died on the night of one of the performances. That theme was, it was strong and provided an incredible amount of material. And and I decided not to avoid it. I decided to let it be, and the show became a hymn, a poem to my mother, and to death in general. And one of those shows was, one of that series during the Fringe was a bit of a flop, put it mildly. There's a lot of people sitting there with their arms folded, looking at me, as if to say, "Come on, impress me." I may have been just misreading and projecting, but it was a difficult night. But on the whole, since then, since 2015, I've been playing with this format on and off each year. A few, half a dozen to a dozen shows per year. Maybe not a dozen, but half a dozen to 10 shows a year. Doing this, yeah.
And you're looking like longer hair and, less shaven. Than
I think the last time I saw you was, I don't remember.
A couple
of
years ago.
Well, I was doing A Good Jew, which was, I played a Nazi. Yeah. So I shaved it all off.
But is this unmaking you a bit?
Say again?
Is this unmaking you a bit?
Unmaking
me? Yeah, because we're in a world of product everywhere. Even scripts are products, and Ursul is product.
Right.
And this journey that an artist can take themselves on can sort of unravel you a bit, can't it?
I've been unravelled by a lot of things over the last couple of years. Death of my mother, the end of my marriage. Lots of things are unravelling. I am also in the process of getting a play for a cast together, which I've been working on for the last couple of years. Hopefully it'll be in London in spring, a play called, currently working title, Illegitimate Target, and which is a play about refugees and about radicalisation. So, yeah, I mean, in a way, I'm being undone by the process of doing unscripted work and fooling work, and at the same time, I love my writing, and I'm keeping that structure quite, I'm keeping going with that work.
And I hate to say this, but also you hinted a little bit of this, and this is me not putting this onto you, this is me talking.
Okay.
But a lot of improv is just scripted, isn't it?
I don't know.
Well, they play games and they say give us suggestions, but they've already written the tune and they.
I don't know. I don't know because I've never been in an improv troupe. I have been in an improv troupe, but it was theatre similar to what I do in that it was comedy. It was work. I suppose inspired by The Fool in that we generally go on with little in terms of structure and idea. We might occasionally turn to the audience and say, "Do you have a thought or do you have a feeling or a dream or a question as if to an oracle or something like that, that you'd like us to play with." But we don't tend to, we in that group didn't really go on with any preconceived ideas or tunes, and we weren't there to do comedy either. We were there to do, if it went comic, that's fine, but anything that came up. So it was always there to be, it was always the entire spectrum of human experience we were trying to give space to. And on all emotions.
Something I have noticed is that in other art forms, kind of the blank canvas, some people absolutely decide what they're going to paint, but a lot more has been done in this spirit in visual arts, in dance actually as well, than has happened in theatre. And when I look down the 200-300 theatre shows that are in this programme, there's almost none of what you're doing. And I wonder why.
Well, it's a risk. It's a quality risk, isn't it? I mean, I could come on and have, I could have no ideas, and we could, I could blank entirely, and I could, I don't know, freeze. It's always a risk. There's no guarantees in such a space. You've got your script. There's, what the words are going to be, even if they're spoken badly and with little emotion. Then at least you've got your lines, and everyone knows where they're blocking, and knows where they're supposed to be, and the lights come up at the right moment, the sound effects come up at the right moment, even if the direction is dodgy. it's low guarantee, and it's risky. It's very vulnerable making as well to go on stage with. Well, it does feels it to me anyway. It's vulnerable making to step out with bugger all up my sleeve.
But I remember reviewing a show called Katie and Rach, which was long form improvisation.
Yeah. Rachel Blackman.
Yeah, and it hasn't always, by their own admission, the shows aren't always as good as each other. But one of them I said, you know, anyone watching this would have thought this had been a script written for a year. It was genius. And I talked to comedians that bring the house down and said, you know, why do you improvise? Because they do. And they said, because I couldn't write this well.
Right.
And so there is something precious about going there, isn't there, and what you're doing. It's not just a risk, it's actually quite important, isn't it, that some people have a go at that.
Well, it is to me, and it's something I've wanted to do since I first saw somebody else doing it, basically, and went and trained with them and spent time with them, Jonathan Kay, effectively. And I'll never be Jonathan Kay, but I'm sort of doing the Jonathan Brown version of my best, my best go at some of that ilk of work, and. It's some amazing things can happen. Beautiful, incredible, mystical, as you said. Tender and stupid and terrible and clunky moments.
Yeah. But also I'm interviewing you about a show that normally, you know, we talk about what's the script and how did it get written. How am I doing, you know, on a rainy afternoon? Because I can't talk about your show. Or ask you about it.
Really well, I thought.
but it just shows there's something there. It's not revealed, and the reason why people should go and see it is the very fact that it's not revealed.
It's my only selling point. It's very hard to describe, in a brochure. You know, I'll be coming on and doing stuff in the moment. Plunges, I think I call it, into the unknown. And I can't remember how I described it in the brochure. It's very, very hard to sell. So in previous. Incarnations of the show, I've done it with a theme, you know, with the title. So I did, for example, a fooling version of Iron John, the story, the Grimm Brothers story, and that gave it a title and it gave it a story background. But in the end, I was improvising around that story. And last year, at the end of last year, I was doing a piece which was called Dying to Meet You, and again, death was the theme. So that theme was around, and it acted as a little flag to sell the piece with, because it is so hard to describe, you know, empty stage, nothing, I haven't got any ideas, it's all improvised, spontaneous, but it's not improvised comedy, it's something different, and it's not short form, it's not long form, it's this form.
But you are no amateur fruitcake, and anyone only has to look. No, they have to look you up to see, you know, the quality of your company's work.
Oh.
And so the Fringe is about to start, and I know you'll probably get people coming to see your work that have seen your work before. But there's also a potential bunch of people out there listening to this interview that are going to think, well, what should we do tonight? And they'll see that your show's on. Mm. So this is my last go.
Okay.
I'm not that serious with this last question, but it's quite kindly meant. Okay. Jonathan Brown, what's the title of your show?
You Can't Watch This Play Again.
And what's it about?
It's about whatever we find on the night, in the space, in ourselves and in each other.
Thank you very much for talking to Fringe Review.